Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora.
大家好.
Malolei.
What's up, everyone?
You're listening to, who are we?
Friends with Benefits.
By Quilted Bananas. And our guest today is, do your own drum roll in your head.
Kia ora, my name is Angela Pelham. It's nice to be here today.
Yay, welcome Angela. And we have our sassy Sue with us today.
And we are?
We are.
I'm not Shichi, I'm Shem.
And I'm not Shem, I'm Shichi.
We haven't done that before. I like that. So Angela, who are you?
Yeah.
It's a very interesting way to phrase that. Who are you?
Yeah, so I am a theatre maker here in the Wellington region. I work as a producer, a stage manager, but more relevant today, I work as an intimacy director and coordinator.
Ooh.
Those are words.
It is, indeed. And the benefits we're sharing with our audience today apparently will be some fresh knowledge of intimacy coordination.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. So, Angela, if you were to do an elevator pitch to people who has never heard of your job before, how would you do it?
Yes, so something that people often think of when they hear of intimacy coordination or direction is that we are just coordinating sex scenes or kissing scenes. But we do so much more than that. We facilitate the physical and emotional intimacy, any nudity or hyperexposure, simulated sex, as well as difficult content, working with bodily fluids, working with power dynamics. It's about keeping performers safe, but it's also about telling a strong story.
I mean, I can confirm that. When I first met you, it was because you directed me to lick someone's finger.
Yes. Yeah, that was one of the first projects that I ever did.
Wow.
Shem did lick period blood, simulated period blood.
Keep up there.
That's good to know.
Off their co-performer's finger.
Shout out
Aston. That was fascinating.
It's probably working, but shout out Aston. Yeah, no, that was really, really, I think it was my first show in Wellington, actually. It was wild.
Yeah.
But
did you two become friends, or I guess, did you collaborate after that?
I don't think we did.
I don't think we do, but the Wellington theatre community is quite small. I feel like everyone sort of knows everyone. So
agreed.
I've seen shows that you've worked on.
And I've reviewed on shows that you've worked
on. And vice versa, yeah.
And I think there was really one interesting thing that I remember you doing is you doing Black Pill, and I remember the theatre review for that was talking about wondering why there was an intimacy coordinator and then realising the necessity for it.
Yes.
That was a solo show.
Yes, absolutely. They are actually, plug, I am not working on the upcoming show Black Pill, but they are bringing it back for the Tahi Festival, and it is exploring incel culture. It's a one-man play, and it opens with quite a stark image of the male character performing self-stimulation. And so that can be quite confronting for the audience, and it also shows that you don't need an intimacy director if you're working with two or more people. It can be really beneficial for solo shows as well.
Yeah.
And the content was quite difficult. There was that physical moment. So, yeah, go check it out at the Tahi Festival.
It's a very, very, very good show, actually.
Wow.
Definitely recommend it.
So looking forward to that. Shall we have some music?
Shall we?
Yes. The first song we will be sharing with our audiences today is actually a theme song from a Japanese drama back in the 2008. So it's like,
I was seven.
Were you
guys
born? Oh, yes, you were seven. Good to know. Yes, and I personally love that TV drama because it's called Last Friends. It explores important themes such as queer platonic relationships, found family, different forms of cohabitation, as well as the heavy topic of domestic violence. And I remember at multiple points of watching that show, I thought, oh, I wish to learn more about how those actors work when there were scenes of vulnerability or intimacy. So I think it relates well to our theme today. So here's the song, Prisoner of Love, made famous by Hikari Utada. Enjoy it.
I'm a prisoner of love, prisoner of love, just a prisoner of love. I'm just a prisoner of love, a prisoner of love. Hey, Kina.
Friends with benefits and quilted bananas. So, Angela, your brief introduction of your role made me think that it's really worthwhile that we revisit the concept of intimacy. So, to you, what counts as intimacy?
Absolutely. So, when I am working in the space of an intimacy director, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people think it is just for sexual or romantic partnerships between one, two, three, or more people. But intimacy itself is inherently so much more than that. Friendship is a form of relationship, and there's a form of intimacy there. Medical intimacy, giving a sponge bath, a doctor doing a medical examination on a patient, a person giving birth, that's really vulnerable and intimate, and there would be some hyperexposure and some vulnerable sort of vocal work that's going into those performances. Working with simulated bodily fluids, like periods that we've talked about. Family relationships, so a mum and a daughter, but those performers aren't actually mum and daughter. It's fascinating when you think about the power dynamics as well, because the mum would be played by an adult and perhaps it's a younger daughter that's being played by a minor. How do we navigate that relationship? How do we navigate siblings? Maybe two performers who have never met each other before today, but they have to portray a sense of historic closeness. That is a form of intimacy. That is a form of relationship. Adversarial intimacy, enemies. I feel like having an intense hate for someone over a long period of time, that is adversarial intimacy, because you have to know someone to hate them, know? And there's a crossover with fight. I feel like quite often on film and TV, you see a fight scene, it kind of ends in a sort of sexy, heightened, will they, won't they? And that undertone can be really good to work with an intimacy director with. And I think I also come on for moments of non-consensual moments. I come and I work when there are heightened or difficult content, death, other difficult things, difficult relationship dynamics. It can be really great. So I think intimacy is just how we relate to others as people. And any relationship, and even the person's relationship to themselves, there is a way that we can find intimacy and find way to tell an intimate story through that relationship.
Wow.
So it feels like, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is safety.
Yes.
It feels like you're there to help facilitate people feeling safe in what they're doing.
Yes.
Which I think is so important, and I think it's important for people to know that intimacy coordination is not just romantic or sexual. So I think that's actually really, and I'm just sitting here like, yes, keep talking.
Well, I'm happy to talk.
Yeah, I'm locked in.
You brought a wonderful array of examples, and you really have demonstrated the significance of having intimacy coordination in all types of theatre, media. How are you finding queer platonic connection in terms of relating to your work?
Yes, absolutely. I think when we're talking about asexual identity, asexual theory, and intimacy direction, there are quite a lot of crossover. And something that I love about queer platonic relationships, so a queer platonic relationship is when people are in a deeply committed and intimate partnership, but it's not, it goes beyond friendship, but it's also not what society deems a regular romantic or sexual partnership. So people in queer platonic relationships may live together, they may raise children, they may share finances, but they're not romantically or sexually involved. But there's that intimacy there where they're more than friends. Friends with benefits.
Yeah.
But the benefits aren't what you think.
Exactly.
And so it's, the term was originally coined by the RO and ACE community, but it just goes to show that relationships come in all different forms, and society places sexual and romantic partnerships above other forms of relationships, and I don't think that should be the case. We can gain so much joy, aroha, from our friends and from our acquaintances and from the regulars you go and see at the market. It's such a joy.
Yeah. So beautiful.
See a dog at a market, I'm like, yo.
No, that is a friend.
Yeah.
No. Lovely. Shim, I know that you have a son. To recommend to us?
I do have a song to recommend to you. It's one of my favourites. So this is Therese by Maya Hawke, who you might know from Stranger Things or the music, I suppose. But I just like it. Enjoy.
Fair.
Stretching out her sore shoulder, leaning back, eyes closed, reaching up. She's wishing she was older, dreaming of an Appaloosa, saddled up, riding out of town. Dreaming of a Shelby Cobra, digging her tires in the ground. Bleeding, ringing in a New Year's mess, unaware of the stain on her dress. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest, it's just a rest. White kitten in the corner, obscene, it really says it all. Milk matches her underwear. Get her down, take her off the wall. She dreams of Marlon and Austin, their bodies tangled in a net. Thinks of him every so often when she feels like a space cadet. She empathizes with your feelings. She's more interested in ceilings. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest, it's just a rest. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest, it's just a rest. Sleeping off the growing pains. We were seeing enemies, spelling out each other's names. Whispering inside our red house while the adults were asleep. A guest to us was just for me, a quiet I keep on keeping. Therese does not belong to you. The horses, cars, and cowboys do. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest, it's just a rest. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest, it's just a rest. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest. It's tactless, it's a test. It's just a rest.
Welcome back to Friends with Benefits by Quilted Bananas on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and we are sponsored by the Royal Foundation. I was going to say spoil.
We are indeed, aren't we?
Yes, we are. So I want to talk about, Angela, your research, because you have done research.
Yes.
So could you just yap about that for a
minute? I would love to. So I have a Bachelor of Arts in Theatre and Film, which I completed in 2022. And then last year I went back to uni and did my honours degree. And I wrote my final research project on intimacy direction, specifically queer intimacy direction. So the title of my final research essay was Queering Intimacy Direction, Reimagining Consent and Desire Beyond Heterosexual Frameworks. And in this major essay, I was critiquing and sort of exploring the dominant cis-heteronormative tropes that are in theatre and film when we're thinking about intimacy, and then I was looking at things from a queer lens. So I interviewed 5 wonderful intimacy directors and coordinators in New Zealand. I was looking at queer theory, and I sort of came up with 3 major conclusions about how to queer intimacy. So the first one was queer consent. How does queer consent look different from regular consent? And then there's also, which I think we're talking about later, how does consent in performance contexts differ from consent in real life? The second thing I came up with was safety, so physical safety. Intimacy directors are quite often likened to stunt directors or fight choreographers, so we're keeping the performers safe. But when a fight coordinator comes onto set, they are focused on telling the story of the punch landing. And all of the prep beforehand keeps the actors safe. So in my case, we are keeping the actors safe. We're keeping them physically and emotionally safe, spiritually, culturally safe. But then we're also telling the story.
True.
It's also really important to consider the cultural consideration. So, for example, here in Aotearoa, in Te Ao Māori, hair is tapu. And for example, cutting hair or touching hair in the head is sacred. And so if we are using stories that are using these actions, how do we do that safely? How do we do that within people's boundaries? Specifically for trans contexts, using gender-affirming modesty garments, binding, tucking. How do we help this actor feel safe in both their body and their character? And then the last thing that I talked about in my essay was lived experience. And this comes from sort of 2 viewpoints. There's the viewpoint of lived experience is inherent. It informs how our body comes to the work. It informs the viewpoint that we're coming to the work with. And it can be really great to have queer, genderqueer, multiracial, all disabled, all sorts of people making art. But then on the flip side, having an identity does not make you an expert. Just because someone is a gay man doesn't mean that they are an expert in gay male sex. And so it's separating lived experience and craft. I could talk about it a lot more, but does that answer your question?
More than we imagined. We're just locked in.
I've got 3 pairs of eyes looking at me very intensely.
we're just entranced with this. Damn.
Wow. I have a question. Yes, Sue, fire.
My question is where that lived experience is different from queer and non-queer, and where your performers are queer and or non-queer, as part of your role to share that or to fill in that non-lived experience.
Absolutely. So when I come to a production, I am never assuming the experiences of the performers. We're starting from a blank page. And so when we break the choreography down, we use really neutral, non-sexualized language. So for example, your hand goes here, you close the contact between a count of 3, take a breath together. It's really non-sexualized. And so you don't actually need to know how to perform a specific sex act to be able to perform it in a performance context. Does that make sense? And so we're breaking it down just like a dance, just like fight choreography. There are movements, there are beats, and the performers aren't actually engaging in a sexual act. It is simulated, it is masked. There's lots of different techniques that we're using. We're using modesty garments, but it's just how do we tell that story? And so you do not need to have, as a performer, the own lived experience of what your character is doing. And I also try and make it so that the performer doesn't have to disclose that. If the performer has not had sex, they do not need to disclose that to still be able to do their job effectively.
Wow.
Yeah, damn.
So amazing. We will ask you more about those techniques that you use in specific processes, but I want to just add a quick question about Planned Parenthood acronym, because I was fascinated in our earlier conversation about the fries crisp. Tell us more about it.
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of people hopefully have heard of the Planned Parent acronym FRIES when it comes to consent. And this stands for freely given, reversible, informed, enthusiastic, and specific. This doesn't work in performance contexts for two reasons. And it doesn't work in an asexual context for one reason. In terms of the performance contexts, freely given is a little more nuanced because the performers are doing a job. There are inherent power dynamics between director, performer. The performers don't want to be seen as difficult to work with. They don't want a reputation for being difficult. And there's also just inherent power dynamics in capitalistic organisations and general hierarchy. But
yeah,
I think that's for a different show. And so freely given, they are consenting to do these actions, but not in the way that it would be in a real life sexual partnership. Mm-hmm. The second one that doesn't work for either performance or asexual experience is enthusiastic. In performance contexts, once again, it's a job. The actors might feel confident and consent to performing intimacy, but that doesn't mean it's comfortable. Mm. And my job isn't to make them comfortable because the work is inherently uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We don't typically touch or kiss our co-workers. That is strange. So it's okay for the performers to be uncomfortable. And the reason enthusiastic doesn't particularly work in an asexual context is because an ace person may be in a relationship with an allosexual person and they might engage in sex, but the ace person just may not care. They may not particularly be enthusiastic, but they'll do it. Mm-hmm. And there's the different sort of relationship dynamics that people can have. You can still consent to something without being enthusiastic about it. So intimacy directors and coordinators, they are a training organization in the States, founded by Jessica Steinrock, created CRISP, which is a new consent acronym that works really well for performance contexts. So CRISP stands for considered, reversible, informed, specific, and participatory. And I think that's really valuable for performance contexts. Participatory in particular, I like working with the actors where they're at. I like collaborating, engaging with ideas, and making sure that we're not going beyond anybody's boundaries. Mm. Boundaries are so, so important, and CRISP is the acronym that I work with the most.
Fantastic.
Thank you. I'm learning so much.
Yes, indeed. And I love how you enable and empower practitioners to be as comfortable as they can professionally imagine.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's great. Shall we have another song?
I reckon we should.
Yeah. So coming up is 星期三或礼拜三, translated as Wednesday or Happy Hump Day by Wei Ruxuan, Wai A Wei, and Yo-Yo Sham, Chen Ninger. Enjoy.
Thank you. 你说别太死板，不如约这一半。如果必须决定，不能由别人决定，虽然你呀很容易分心。代谢是星期一，忧郁的星期三。你当然也狂放，但也有些牵绊。感情是铁钉碰上柔软的心，生命必须保持清醒，也混沌不明。为什么我会被你吸引？
What's up, guys?
Welcome back to Friends with Benefits
by Quilted Bananas
and sponsored by the Rule Foundation.
Now, I want to talk about a film Angela is working on now because it's an ACE film.
Yeah.
Would you like to elaborate?
I would like to elaborate. So we did actually, production for this film was a while ago, but it has yet to be released. The film is called The Talk. It was directed by Judah Jackson. It was written by Judah Jackson and Olive Shadbolt, and the performances were by Estelle Saunders and Tane Harkness. These were all Australian-based film and theatre makers, and the film itself shows an ACE storyline. From memory, the director was queer, and it was co-directed by a queer person and an ACE person, and the ACE performer herself is ace. And I have got permission from all of these people to be sharing the names and experiences that I'm talking about today.
Right.
Yes, I did double check. I love ethics. I love consent. So this was a really cool project to work on because asexuality is so underrepresented in media. And the way that this film worked, it was a short film and it opened with these two characters on a date and then they start kissing, they start making out, it looks like it's going to develop further, and then the ace character reveals that she's ace. It's new in the relationship, and then they have the talk, the titular talk of the film. And so I was there to work on the moment of lip to lip, but I was also working with Estelle on separation between self and character. Mm-hmm. It's that question of lived experience. You don't want to harm yourself or traumatize yourself in any way playing difficult roles.
True.
You don't want to draw on lived experience.
No.
There are a lot, for example, like method actors, I think, are really dangerous. Once again,
I agree.
Another topic of conversation. So this film will be released sometime, hopefully, but it is really, really beautiful. It was the two performers, and I thought it was a really nuanced and well-written, well-performed. I'm losing my words.
I can't, like, yeah. I'm very interested. We'll have to see it when it comes out, I reckon.
I'll share it with you, yes.
Please do. I think it'll be really, really interesting to see, because the only other ace film I remember seeing was at the Japanese Film Festival, and it was a film called I Am Who I Am. And I went into it not knowing what it was, because I was just like, Japanese Film Festival, let me go watch a film. But no, I think it's very powerful to be able to see those stories. And I think, like you said, it's very important to be able to separate the character from yourself, especially when the character sometimes can be quite close to yourself.
Absolutely. I think it was also great that the asexual character was a woman. I feel like a lot of the time in the limited representation that we do get, they're often male characters. And I also think they really challenge some of the misconceptions that exist around asexuality. And then sort of there's a difference between, it's like the split attraction model. You can be romantically interested in someone without the desire to have sex. And so I think they really navigated that really well.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Damn.
Is there an example of a specific technique involved in this process that you are happy to share with us?
Oh my goodness, I have so many tools and techniques in my kite. Cut me off whenever. But the first thing that we did sort of talk about was the desexualized language, the neutral language. For example, I'm not going to say, hey, Shem, can you hump your scene partner? I would say, can you put your leg here and here? We're going to close the distance between the top of your pelvis and your scene partner's pelvis over a count of two beats, rhythmically, with a medium pressure. Your eye contact, you're going to have eye contact, and then your gaze is going to go from here to here, and then we'll like have an exhale together.
Yeah, and
that description is not sexy.
No, and it would make me feel far less panicked about doing the thing.
Because it's broken down, so I break everything down. Something else that we do is touch consent or body mapping, which is where we go through each part of the body, and I don't use like red zone, orange zone, green zone, but I think that might be the easiest for our listeners to kind of comprehend. So we go through each of our body parts and we're like, red, no. Green, yeah, you can touch me on my hands. One of my examples is my waist would be orange. And the conditions I would put on that are, one, it needs to be choreographed. You need to tell me that you're going to touch me on my waist. Mm. Two, it has to be a firm touch because I'm ticklish and I might elbow you in the face. Mm. So we go through our body that way. And then the boundaries and containers that we're working within are really well outlined so the performers can feel free to play within those containers without fear of crossing a boundary or harming their scene partner. Mm. I think that specificity creates so much freedom when we're working in performance spaces.
I like that.
Yes, mm. It's like the difference between your teacher saying, write an essay versus write a 1500 word essay on the power imbalances in so-and-so play. Mm. You've got something to work with and then you're not just in the great wide unknown. Mm. I have a lot of physical games that I use, a lot of contact games, some of which I come up on the spot. One that I use quite regularly is a frantic assembly method. So Frantic Assembly are a physical theatre company in the UK and they have a game called Buy Round Through, which I absolutely love and I play with nearly every cast that I work with. Mm. I facilitate super clear communication. I make sure that things are written into contracts. I make sure that performers have minimum 24 hours of notice before a intimacy rehearsal if they are going to be doing a simulated lip-to-lip. Mm. Preferably 48 hours would be best. And then things such as check-in processes, closure processes, de-rolling, shaking the work off so that people can go home as themselves without bringing the work home with them.
Yeah. Wow. Damn.
So amazing. I have an additional question about this.
Yes.
This full repertoire of wonderful tools and techniques, do they usually exist in the mind of intimacy coordinators or can they be found, recorded somewhere just for the wider community to learn?
That is an incredible question. I think some processes are starting to become more mainstream in performance contexts. So check-ins and closures, touch consent, more and more people are using these practices. We have a wonderful document in New Zealand, the Guidelines of Intimacy Coordination in Aotearoa. It was written by Jennifer Ward-Leland and Tandy Wright, I believe. And so that's a really great document that directors and producers can draw from to make sure that they are using best practice, even if an intimacy director isn't on board. Mm. When I'm on board a project, I always document every single rehearsal. I document every single moment of intimacy. Hand A goes here, hand B goes here. We take a beat, this line happens, then we do this. So that when I'm not in the room, because I'm often not in the rehearsal room for the full process, the stage manager, the director, the performers all know exactly what we created so that it doesn't stray, so that changes don't keep happening and so that the moment doesn't slowly morph into something else. Mm-hmm. That's dangerous for two reasons. One, the performers did not consent for the moment to morph into something else. Mm. And two, it tells a different story. And so clear documentation is really important. I always do a handover with the director and stage manager as well. I go, here's how to do an intimacy call. Here are some questions to ask the performers before each show. Make sure that this, this, and this is happening each show. So I always scaffold the performance so that they're well supported.
I really like that.
What a rigorous process.
It is very rigorous. It took a lot of money to train.
Oh, indeed. How valuable this occupation is.
It's so fascinating, honestly.
Yeah. Oh,
so cool.
Fascinated, Shen. Do you have another song to share with us,
Ben? I do. It's by one of my favourite bands, The Last Dinner Party. They are a queer band from the UK. And this is The Feminine Urge. Mm. Hit it.
Breathe like a girl.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Friends with Benefits by Quilted Bananas on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, and we are sponsored by the Rural Foundation. Now, we're back here with Angela again. I say back. Angela never left. So I wanted to know, like, beyond theatre itself, or film, but beyond performance is the word. Mm-hmm. Are there any lessons from your work that people could apply to their own relationships and communities?
So many. I think the biggest one for me is consent. And there has been a culture of change in consent spaces over the past few years, especially since Me Too. It has kind of come into the public eye more. I think it is so important to understand that consent is ongoing. Just because you consent to something with one person on one day doesn't mean that you're consenting to do the same thing even with the same person on a different day. I also think in New Zealand, we really struggle with saying no.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about just in romantic, sexual or friendship, like in relationships. I'm talking about maybe someone asks you to do something and you genuinely don't have the capacity, but you still say yes. So learning to say no is really difficult, but I think that it's so important in our regular lives and it's really important in performance contexts. Mm-hmm. I also think just like communication, transparency, mm-hmm. being kind to one another, being nice people, upholding, like having personal values and then actually upholding them, not just saying that you have a value. Mm-hmm. And I also think the last thing that I wanted to think about that we can take away is separating discomfort from unsafety. I just want to make a little side note that the person who marked my thesis said that unsafety isn't a word. It is a word. It's in the dictionary. Nicola Hyland, please listen to this. but separating discomfort from feeling unsafe, because we can be in a space where we are outside of our comfort zone, but it's a space where we can healthily grow, we can healthily push ourselves, we can feel challenged. But then there's spaces where we feel unsafe and there is chance of physical and emotional harm. So going outside of our comfort zone is good. I need to listen to what I'm saying and do that more myself. Going out of your comfort zone is good. It's how we grow. But learning the difference between safely being out of our comfort zone and pushing into unsafe spaces is really important.
Wow. I feel so nourished by your fruitful thoughts.
Thank yeah. you.
You know so much.
And no means no.
And no means no, people.
And no means no.
Yes. How do you envision
the future for intimacy coordination as an occupation then?
Absolutely. I think we've already made leaps and bounds in terms of intimacy practitioners. People can be surprised to learn that the practice is quite new. So, for example, the first ever intimacy coordinator on film was HBO's The Deuce in 2018.
Damn.
That is the first time the role, a formalised version of the role, was ever credited. The intimacy coordinator was Claire Warden, I believe. And then, so we've already come so far. Mm. For the future, I hope that it just continues to become more mainstream, that more productions and directors see the value of the work that intimacy practitioners do. Mm. I think it would be great for it to continue to be embedded in actor training. I have the privilege of coming in to Victoria University of Wellington to do guest lectures, guest workshops, and working with the students. I think it would be great if we could move that even down into secondary school spaces, mm-hmm. so that teenagers can be having these discussions and thoughts about consent and their own personal boundaries before going out into the big wide world. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I really just want it to become more accessible in New Zealand. It's expensive. Most of the training programs are overseas, and I have had to fight to get to where I am today, and I know many others who have as well. It's an absolute privilege to be able to do what I'm doing, but I wish that it was more accessible.
Mm. Let's keep hoping and keep endeavouring.
Fighting the fight.
Damn. Okay, if someone leaves this whole conversation and they only remember one thing, what do you want that thing to be? That's a loaded question.
Pick your priority.
I think the biggest one is that intimacy direction is not just about sex. Mm. It's about all different sorts of relationship dynamics. It's about all different sorts of physical touch, emotional closeness, content. It's not just about sex.
Mm. Not just about sex.
Not just about sex. Well, it's time to say goodbye. We are so honoured to have Ashley share with us.
Ashley is not her name.
No, I am so overwhelmed that I even mispronounce Angela's name. Angela, you've been so wonderful.
Very insightful, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great privilege and a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And so we are ending today's Friends with Benefits by Friends with Bananas. And we have one last song to share with you. It's Once in a Blue Moon, Du Shang Si Lo by Yellow Huang Xuan and Mavis Fan Xiao Xuan. And before we go, a final shout out to Sue, our sassy tacky today.
Just listen to G. If it are probably but dab the night, Foxy, Foxy lady.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.